number 5 and 7. And then, and they are on the back also. I'm going to try to finish as much as I can tonight. Now, since the school ends tomorrow night, I intend to summarize everything I've taught in capsular form and show you how it has all come to pass and is happening now. Not that you will think that Tom really knows his stuff, but that you'll realize that everything that has come to pass, God made very, very clear. And as we have drawn near the end time, the interpretation of when and how he would do it has made itself crystal clear. And that means a whole lot to me. I believed all this because they taught me this when I was a teenager. But then when I got old enough, or when God was ready, I still believe it, just like they taught it. And they didn't go into great interpretation of it. They just said this was going to happen. So I believed them because I believed it was a word of God. It's funny how that happens. I wish I could take... No, I don't want to take credit for it. If I could take credit for this, I'd be God. And I wouldn't want his job. Because, man, there's no way I could ever put up with all this. And so I'm glad that I was born. And I'm glad that God knew that I would be saved before the foundation of the world. And I'm glad he gave me a choice. And I'm glad he enabled me to make that choice. I'm not a Calvinist. But after all these years, I'm so relieved to know that God did it all. I mean, when I got saved, I didn't any more realize that God got it on and God did it all in Moody's Goose. But now I know. And it's a real blessing that I want people to enjoy. God wanted me to enjoy it, and I'm enjoying it. And it's making me look forward to it. And so I want to just present this part here, and I'll go as far as I can on this. And then tomorrow night I want to do a summation. I'll continue this. But there's some things I've noticed since I started this that are just even more remarkable to me than the things that I learned while I was going through it. The actual simplicity of God's word and how at different times he would speak through a prophet concerning one thing, it actually applied to two situations. That is the hardest thing in prophecy to understand. And I knew it was true, and I knew that you could get in trouble if you didn't know what you were doing. So I like to think that God waited until I halfway knew what I was doing before he let me find and see these things. But I found them through other preachers teaching them, and there they were. And I have really enjoyed that experience. So I start this one off by simply asking, do you have a love for the written word? Yes, I do. And I used to listen to those preachers pound on the pulpit and tell us how much they love the word and how much we ought to love the word. And I sat there as a teenager and I listened to that. And I listened to it and I listened to it and I listened to it. I even listened to it every time I went to California and they had me out there for a meeting. And they'd have a banquet or something, and they'd all talk about how wonderful the word was. And I just, you know, I just thought, you know, well, I know that's right, but why do you have to keep repeating it so much? But I was the one that was wrong. And for that living word, who gave it? Do you have a love for the written word and for the loving word who gave it? You know, I came to realize after I got all this wonderful education, that, and I've taught it out to you many times, my grandmother, she was a simple hill woman. And we called her the bad woman from the Osage. But she didn't, she read the Bible all the time. She didn't know the things that I learned about Bible manners and customs. She didn't understand that Jesus was the pre-incarnate Christ. She didn't understand that. But I'll tell you, she had a deep devotional for that love, and she showed it every day to me in her life and her patience. When Papa Mac would bring a bunch of people home, I saw her humanity. She'd get out there in the front and she'd hug them and say, "Oh, I'm so good to see you." And it was a bunch of people from the hill country where we came from. And Lord have mercy, they were backward, backward, backward. But she'd hug them, squeeze them. And then she'd run back in the kitchen and motion for me. And she'd say, "Tom Mac, you got to help me." She said, "Henry's done it again." And so I grew up like a kid around her. And she had more faith and courage and a greater love for God and for his word than I had as a teenager. And even then, I knew more about Moses and Elijah than she did. But it's not how much head knowledge you get. It's how well that head knowledge leads you to understand the one who gave it to you and who led you to it. And he taught you that. If you ever get to the point where you feel like that you had something to do with the teaching of it, you can forget that. You can forget it. Imogene, she had a hard time interpreting, and I'd sit and teach her off that big print, and I learned that here's someone that really has a love for the written word. And when I realized that, it began to deflate me. And when I began to understand those names in Isaiah 9 and the rest of them, and 9 and 6 and 7, I began to understand some things about myself that I never realized. But you know, my grandmother realized that about herself, and so did my grandfather. That's why I mention them all the time. I'm sorry to burden you with all my tales of the good old days and the hills. But then I learned something, and I've learned it in the last 5 or 6 years. And it's something that really I could not have ever known or understood. If all these transitions I've gone through, God had not led me through, and God had not taught me, and God had not had long suffering and patience with me. I'm now learning to worship him as the way, definite article, the truth, definite article, and the life. Now, if you had been God, of course, we can't even imagine what it's like to be like him. But I suppose if we could have been God, would you have had as much faith, as much long suffering and love for Israel? And so I was taught in the hills up there that Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and I was even taught that Seth's line. And I was always taught that actually Adam and Eve would go to heaven. But I was taught also, where you live in heaven is determined by how much of the actual inheritance you want. And God has given you the right. And he will give you the ability to inherit as much as you want. So how much of the inheritance do you want? I want all the reward. You say, do you think you can get it? No, but I know I can run. I don't know how much I'm going to receive, but I know that I'm saved and I know I'm going to be there. That's a mighty wonderful thing. And they rejected their Messiah. Consider what you know about him. Consider how long-suffering he is. Consider how wonderful and kind he is too. Consider how you're praying to him and hoping your children turn out well. Consider all the things that you're hoping for and all the things you're thankful for. And now, don't blame him for that veil of blindness. Just thank God he's so merciful. He's going to lift it. And just thank God that they can be saved even now if they'll receive Christ right now. And they can become members of New Testament churches. I know some. And they can serve God. Thank God for that. You say, well, what about the others? People try to blame God for everything. I don't blame God for anything. I just thank God for mercy. I thank God for kindness. I thank God for gentleness. I thank God for justice. And I thank God that He was just and fair with me, more so than I ever deserved, as He always was with all people. But we're in a situation right now where all this stuff that He wrote, I now know why He called me. It wasn't that He had to have me, but I was saved. He knew what I would do, and He knew how corrupt I was. He knew how sinful I was. He knew about all my secret sins. He knew all that, and He still called me. It would have been so much easier to call a man who was already humble. And He does do that sometimes. I knew a humble preacher that pastored over in southwestern Arkansas. Most humble man I ever saw in my life. He has been that way from the day of his birth. He pastored the whole community. But he was just as strong in his belief that God wanted His children to join a place where they were worshiped in spirit and in truth, and where they practiced His ordinances. His name was Jackie. And everybody knew Jackie. When I first started preaching revivals for him, I said to myself, why aren't you like that? Why aren't you humble like him? Why are you so much in love with yourself? Why do you worry all the time about, am I doing this for the right reason? I knew that a lot of it was because I loved attention. But I also knew I couldn't quit. I just couldn't quit. Because there was someone inside me that just kept picking me up and say, get over it and go on. He never spoke to me in my ear, but He always spoke to me in my heart. But I never could understand my call. I never felt worthy of it. I just knew that there had to be a lot of changes in me, because I'd met preachers that were far more spiritual than I have ever been. I met church members, deacons, and others that I thought, Lord, I wish I could be like that. But God called me for a reason. I don't know the full reason, and I don't care. I just know now for sure He called me. Now, when they think they have attained a degree of peace and safety, they will be attacked by 10 Islamic nations from the north. This was one thing that I had trouble with, because I knew there had to be a peace. Would I have known that if God had not got me involved in a war over there that was called the French and the French and Saudi, the Morocco French War? Would I have known this if I had not been over there? Listen, I learned all about a bunch of stuff. And as I learned it over there, I learned some answers to some questions about scriptures that I didn't understand. I believed them. And I believed them earnestly and with all the heart I have that wasn't carnal. But God had a purpose in my life. And God wanted me to understand these things so I could tell other people about them. Because to me, they're so amazing. I never could understand that scripture about 10 coming down from the north. I knew they were coming down. But the timing, and what happened, what had to happen before they came down. I knew that right after I came up here. And I couldn't. So I put it somewhere. I didn't really misplace it, But I sure couldn't, I sure wasn't happy with my description of that, why it was going to happen. I now am. Why? Because many shall run to and fro and knowledge shall be increased. What knowledge? God's knowledge in their hearts. Many shall run to and fro and knowledge shall be increased. And it has been increased. And it increased in me. So I came back from over there thinking I was prepared. I didn't want to go in service. I'm a natural born coward. So when time came along, and I got out of high school, I wanted to be a grocery store clerk. I wanted to work my way up to being a manager of a Kroger store, and I wanted to do it, and I knew I could do it. My father was a grocery store clerk. He was a manager of a Kroger store. My grandfather, Michael Murray, was a owner of a grocery store. I knew the grocery store business backwards, forwards, and sideways, and I loved every bit of it. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to go to war. I didn't want to go fight. But I'm an American. Yeah, I'm a coward. But I'm an American. And I'm an American before anything else. And I was willing to die for this country. But I wanted to do it, if I was going to have to, my way. So I took a chance. My mother had a friend on the draft board. So I was out of school and I was working, had been in the Kroger store. And all of a sudden the war broke out in Korea. And all of a sudden, all of us that had graduated, when we did, we ran to each other and say, "Man, what are we going to do?" And they said, "What do you suggest?" So we all talked it over. We decided we were going to run down and join the Air Force. That was it, man. We didn't run to Canada. We weren't cowards in that sense. But we didn't run to Canada. We went in service, and we were willing to go. And so he sent us our different ways, and we learned our different things. And after it was all over, and I went through the seminary in Little Rock. I've never told you this before, but I didn't go there to be a preacher. I went there to learn as much as I could about Jesus Christ so I could be a Sunday school teacher and could be a really good Sunday school teacher in one of our churches. And I studied the whole time I was there. I'm an all-A student. I study. God gave me a good mind. But the devil gave me a terrible carnal nature. And so all of a sudden, there I was, sitting and listening to a message by Vernon Lowerly in Dardanelle Missionary Baptist Church. And I couldn't stand it anymore. I remember what Leonard was talking to me about being called to preach, and he asked me some questions about it. I think I told you some things that happened to me about it. It's something that you're not completely sure of until you do it. And after Vernon Lowerly and sat and listened to me for a long time, he said, "Tom, you're never going to know whether you're called to preach if you don't do it." And then he said, "I want you to preach for me on Wednesday night." I said, "In May?" Or he said, "Next Wednesday." And I went down there that night and I practiced in my room 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 and I practiced in my room. And the kids asked Imogene, "What's Daddy doing?" And she said, "Oh, don't worry about it. You'll find out." And I got up that night and I preached. When I finished, there's never been one moment's doubt in my mind that I was called by God to preach the gospel. And I jumped in thinking I knew what I was doing. And I've been studying ever since. I've been learning from other preachers ever since. I've been learning directly from the Bible by ever since. And I love what I do. I love what I do. And I thank God from the depths of my soul for calling me. So I'm not going to tell you about that tomorrow night. I'm just going to show you some things that I've learned that make me sure that I have interpreted these scriptures the way that God wanted them interpreted. And I think it'll be a blessing to you. I know it's a blessing to me. So I hope that you'll be here. And if you're not able to be here, Cooney's not going to be able to be here. So get the tape and listen to it. Because it's a message from my heart, from me to you. And you've known me for 40 years. 1 Thessalonians 5, 2 through 5. For yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so cometh as a thief in the night. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them as travail upon a woman with a child, and they shall not escape. But ye, brethren, members of the church at Thessalonica, and we should not be in darkness either, are not in darkness that that day should overtake you as a thief. You are the children of light and the children of the day. You are not of night nor of darkness. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. When I went over there, I learned about Hudna. But when I came back, I couldn't remember exactly how that Hudna worked. So I got me a Koran, and I read it, all of it. And I studied it, all of it. And I studied, and I can tell you exactly what a Koran is and exactly how it's instituted. And it is a treaty. It is a peace. And so when I saw that, I said, uh-oh. And I also had the privilege of meeting the boys that were known as the, the Brotherhood. I met them in an alley in Tripoli. Was that by accident? I don't think so. So when we got back and we were okay and I got home, I went and checked out in libraries that had English works in them, and I discovered who they were. And I discovered that the rulers of Egypt, the military men, all hated them. So when this thing came up in this country and they said, and Hillary and Bill said, oh, they're just real nice people. They're not like the others. That's the first time I was absolutely positive that they were both liars. Liars, 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 liars. But I knew they were when they were here. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't have somebody killed while they were here. And so God's prepared me for what I do. And I don't count myself as being a king. I'm supposed to take the lower seat. And if God wants to put me anywhere else, and he doesn't put me there, that's all I deserve. I'm just glad he'll put me there. Now, for when they shall say peace and safety. Now I know when it's going to occur. Right now, the United Nations, the United States, Russia, China, Great Britain, and France. And I suppose also, maybe, the freaks in Iran. They're listening to the United Nations. Our president loves the United Nations. Bill Clinton loves the United Nations. He wanted to be head of it at one time. Hillary loves the United Nations. And the best thing that could possibly happen for all those nations in their minds is to have a Hudna in the Middle East between the nations in the north, Iran, Iraq. These will be the ones in the northern treaty. There'll be some others, but I'm not going to try to name them now. They'll have good old Iran, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Hezbollah, I'll name one more, Turkey. That's the Northern Confederation. They will love to have a brief hudna so they can get ready to attack Israel, which is one of the most powerful nations on the surface of this earth. Do you think it was an accident that I was in the National Security Agency while they were preparing the Negev? Do you think it's by accident that I was over there, and there I was, and when I went over there on trips, I could find most of them, but I couldn't find all of them. They're the best camouflage experts I've ever seen in my life. I studied it in the National Security Agency so I could understand the way that you camouflage things from different types of preparations made to find them on the earth. They got all kind of different ones. But do you think all that was an accident? Man, I was so busy trying to do what I was trying to do and not knowing exactly what I was doing, if you want to know the truth, then I just, you know, I had no... But finally, one day, it dawned on me. This is why you're over here. And I looked at that thing and I said, man, I've got to give it all I got, but all I got is Jesus. You see, well, you say, why do you say that? Because by that time, I had learned that all I had was Jesus. And when Leonard came up here and he started teaching about those names, you have no idea how much that helped me. I sat back there and I listened. Some of it I didn't particularly like. But most of the things that I have learned in life were things that I didn't particularly like from the time I was a teenager. And then I began to study them myself. I began to see other things about them. They began to fit into something I already knew. And I began to rejoice. And I wasn't irritated at Leonard anymore. I got over it. And if you think he was never irritated at me, well, I don't blame him. Huh? I don't blame him. I told him I didn't blame him. But we learned something about life. And we both learned it studying the same thing, those names. And Leonard, I'll thank you till the day I die. But I thank God for it, because he's the one that led you to do that. And it's made my life a whole lot easier. I've enjoyed these last 3 or 4 years here, Pastor. I have really enjoyed it. And I'll trust Leonard with my life. It's hard to learn to trust a man, because you know he's got a carnal nature just like you. It's hard. But God does it. He trusts a lot of people with carnal nature, and he goes ahead and uses them anyway. So if we're supposed to be like the Lord, or try to be like the Lord, that's something we just have to get over. Now, he says, but ye, brethren, are not in darkness, that day should overtake you as a thief, for ye are all the children of light and the children of the day, and ye are not of the night nor of darkness. That diagram I made that I pass out so much, I made one before that in 1909, I believe. And it was spot on. And it's the same thing I put out in 11. But that's the first time I put in there that Israel would be attacked 1,335 days from the end of the tribulation period. And I looked at that, and I prayed about it, and I looked at it, and I prayed about it before I ever put it in it, and I said, Lord, this is the only way I can see that happening. I know it's going to happen. And I went ahead and put it in there. Well, now that the United Nations is in place, and it's involved with that, the nations that are trying to get them to have this hudna, this treaty, that's the way it's going to happen. But I didn't figure that out. God had that figured out from the foundation of the world, in my opinion. And it's there. And I'm going to run you off a color copy. I've got a new color machine now. And How much we pay for that mic? I think. $217.99, and it's a dandy. And I tried to talk one into Kenneth into one that he could turn on and off, but that cost an extra $5, so I had to settle for this one. I have to crank it shut. Okay. And I don't know what I'd do without Kenneth. I don't know what I'd do without Michael. I don't know what I'd do without any of you. I mean that, everyone. I don't know what I'd do without you. You don't know what an encouragement you are to me. But if you're an encouragement to me, think what an encouragement you are to God. And I wonder, Leonard, do you remember who said this, that God was our benefactor? Well, I just couldn't remember. Well, he is our benefactor. And you're a benefactor to me. If you don't want to learn from other preachers, you might get out of the ministry. Because that's what this is all about. And every preacher I've ever known, I found characteristics I really admire. I could go down every one of you here that I know, and I know your husbands, and I know what they did, and I could tell you that I see God's characteristics in you, and I see Paul's characteristics in you, and I've got Paul's characteristics in me too. And so why in the world shouldn't I just love and hug you every time I see you? And if Kenneth wants to call God Daddy, it's okay. Not Kenneth, but Leonard. It's okay with me. I might even call him Daddy myself once in a while. Okay. Now, I'll give you that stuff tomorrow night, and I'll try to run off enough where I'll put some spare copies of it out there. 1 Corinthians 3:14-16. But their minds were blinded, for until this day remaineth the same veil untaken away in the reading of the Old Testament, which veil is done away in Christ. Don't you ever dare hold God accountable for not letting them be saved. Because the same gospel and the same truth has been preached to them for a very long time on the airways and on the land. And many ministers have paid for their life over there and have been treated like rag dolls that were true New Testament churches, and they kill most of them off. They put the veil over their own heart, and they don't want it off. But even until this day, when Moses is read, the veil is upon their heart. Nevertheless, when it shall turn to the Lord, the veil shall be taken away. They're going to turn to the Lord. They already are turning into the Lord, many of them. But in the actual tribulation period, the last part of it, the actual period of wrath, there's going to be a remnant brought through there. And when it's brought through there, it's going to come out in bodies of flesh. Their heart's going to be saved. They're going to the millennial. And they're going to be like me. I'm just part Jew, but they're going to be all Jew, just about. And they may be all Jew. But they're going to have carnal natures. And when they come out of there with carnal natures, in sinful flesh, they're going to come out of there saved and sealed. And nevertheless, when they shall turn to the Lord, the veil shall be taken away. And they are going to reign with Christ. And they will be all over this earth. And we will be the ones who go out and minister to them. And they themselves will be witnesses. And we will strengthen them. And we will teach them. And we will minister to the Lord. How many ways? I don't know. But I know we'll work for him. And I know we won't get tired. I know we won't get weary. We won't ever get mad. We'll love to talk to each other. We won't be jealous of each other. We won't be hateful. We won't be spiteful. There'll be a sense of joy in us that will never fade. It will never go away. Never. It will be there constantly. The only reason it won't kill us is because God is in us. And He is that joy that will permeate through our entire body and all that we are forever. We are not of the night, nor of darkness. And it's going to be a wonderful thing to be there in a body that He gives us, which He lives in, consumes all of us in His nature, changes us into what He is like, and we won't mind it one bit. We will be thankful for everything He has ever done for us forever. That's joy. That's true joy. This is what we're supposed to do as missionary Baptists. We're supposed to worship Him as the way, the truth, and the life. Yield to Him, obey Him, follow Him, follow Paul's teachings as Paul followed Jesus. Observe the ordinances. Be baptized by immersion by the authority of the local church. He didn't give us something impossible to follow. And He gave us Himself so we could follow it. I didn't say we could do it perfectly, but He did. And all power in heaven and earth is given unto Him. He's God. So how am I going to explain why something else was more important to me than worshiping God the way He wanted to be worshiped? And how can I worship God if I'm mad at Leonard? And how can I worship God if I'm mad at any one of you? How can I do that? I'm here to tell you it's impossible. I'm here to tell you it's impossible. And I'm here to tell you that we ought to make an honest conscience effort. And I'm going to preach, I think, about this on Sunday morning. I'm going to also show some things that I never really showed you before. But now that I know how this thing up here is going to fit in, and I really believe I know how it's going to fit in, and if I'm wrong, God forgive me. But He has made me feel bad about it. So I've enjoyed tonight. I'm sorry I didn't get any further than I did. But I got some good news. You want to read this and see how the Jews are treating Christians over there? How the rabbis are treating them? Just read what follows on this. But I thank God I've had the privilege of pastoring this church for 40 years. Lord, have mercy. Suppose He had sent me to one of those churches where I turned into a legalist. I would have made a fine legalist. I'd have just kept excluding people left and right, never had much compassion in any way. I'd have just been one of those guys that they wanted to exclude my grandfather for playing old maid's cards. That's what I would have grown up to be. But I grew up to be a sinner, chief of sinners. If it wasn't for Kenneth, I'd be in trouble. Yeah, let's see. Who else is going to be out there? Be a lot of deacons out there. Kenneth, you want to dismiss us?